Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. It's a Friday. We've got Premier League football tomorrow. We've just had Carabao Cup football in midweek. Mental, crazy, nuts, bonkers, whatever you want to call that game at Anfield. It was all of those things and probably more. So we're going to talk about that game a bit, of course, today on the show. Isn't it really the most Arsenal thing you can think of to go to Anfield and score five times, five goals at Anfield against Liverpool and still somehow not win the game? To be leading 3-1 and to be leading 4-2 and not win the game. To be leading 5-4 with just seconds to go and not win the game. It is the most on-brand Arsenal thing you can possibly think of. And, you know, it's been a hell of a week, all things considered. On the pitch, not particularly great. Off the pitch, not particularly great. And it's got so weird, and people are so fed up with what's going on that there's this sort of, no, I won't say a groundswell of support for Jose Mourinho, but certainly more support for Jose Mourinho being manager of Arsenal than I ever thought possible. I mean, I just can't. No way. It doesn't make any sense to me. Do these people not have memories? Can they not remember what a massive wanker this man is? Do they not remember what a terrible job he did at Manchester United with all of that money, how he lost the dressing room, how the players basically hated him? And when you're in a situation like Arsenal are at this moment in time, you need an appointment. If you are making a hypothetical new appointment, let me just throw that out there as a crazy thing that might happen in the not too distant future. I think you need somebody to come in and put out the flames, not walk in and throw oil all over them and make them even bigger. Like, hiring Jose Mourinho is like having an itch on your leg, and rather than scratching it, you take out a chainsaw and chop the whole thing off. I just don't get it. I can't get it. I won't ever get it. No matter how you try and justify it to me about his record, yes, he's had a great record down the years. Yes, he's been a brilliant coach, but come on. No way. Just no way. Mourinho at Arsenal, it's not right. It's not right. And I'm not talking about Wenger, and I'm not talking about our supposed class and values and all these arguments that people throw at you when they say, oh, you just don't want Mourinho because you love Wenger or you think Arsenal have class and values. No, I don't want him because I think he's a wanker. And I think he's been one of the worst people in football for 15 years now. Like a figure of hate for Arsenal fans and for football fans. And all of a sudden we're supposed to go, well, yeah, things are a bit bad at the moment. Let's forget about all those reasons why we disliked him down the years and bring him on board. You know, think about the examples of how somebody comes in from a club you don't like and you're sort of like, oh, you're wrestling with this thing where you go, well, now that they're an Arsenal player, I guess I should try and get behind them. I'm thinking William Gallas here. That ended well, huh? That was great. That really worked out well, didn't it, when we got behind him and made him captain of the club, and then he sat down on the pitch at Birmingham throwing a big strop. Quite relevant in the week that we're talking, and I guess we're going to talk a bit about Granit Xhaka, and I am going to talk a bit about Granit Xhaka now in a second. But, you know, Gallas is like, Mourinho is sort of like the Gallas of managers. Or Silvestre, Mikel Silvestre. You're looking at this guy and you go, he's rubbish. I've hated him for years. He's in the final stages of his career. His performance level is dwindling. What am I supposed to get on board with here? So, no thank you. No thank you when it comes to Jose Mourinho and Arsenal. I do think it is primarily a media invention. I think it's probably to do with Mourinho just making sure people know he's available again, and taking advantage of Arsenal at a slightly difficult time, very difficult, horrendously difficult. However you want to look at it, whatever your perspective is on it, things aren't great at this moment in time at Arsenal. So who is the kind of person who maneuvers things in their own benefit when things like that happen? What do you call that kind of a person? I know there's a name for it, where they take advantage of difficult situations so they can make hay for themselves. I can't remember the name, but there you go. I can't believe I've even spent this long talking about how much I don't want Mourinho at Arsenal. It should be taken as read, so I'm going to move on. The Granit Xhaka thing. It's Thursday when I'm recording now, and you're listening to this on Friday or over the weekend, and maybe we will have had some communication from Granit Xhaka. But since what happened on Sunday, we have not heard a peep from the still remaining Arsenal captain, apart from him changing his Instagram profile, removing all traces of Arsenal. It was a picture of him with the Arsenal armband. Now it's a picture of him as a Switzerland player, Switzerland captain. There was, I think, his bio said Arsenal player or Arsenal captain, and he changed it to Under Armour athlete. If that's not as pointed as it gets, I don't know what is. But we haven't heard from him. We haven't heard a word from the captain of the football club after what happened on Sunday. And I'm not sure really that that's great, to be perfectly honest. The club have suggested that he apologise, and Unai Emery said that Granit Xhaka was not ready to apologise, that he's feeling very down and very sad. And I think it's a fine line between feeling down and very sad and feeling very angry and like, fuck you, I'm not going to apologise. Or if you are going to apologise, it's going to be a bit like Father Jack. You know that episode of Father Ted where he was made apologise and it went a bit like this?
I'm so sorry.
So we have a problem on our hands. We still have a problem on our hands because there's been no sense from the club about what exactly they're going to do or how they're going to deal with this situation. And it's sort of, they've just sort of put it on the long finger. And maybe people calm down, or maybe it also speaks to a lack of decisiveness or leadership when it comes to this particular situation, which I accept is not an easy one. It's not a simple solution because there are many factors to consider, as James and I talked about on the Arscast Extra on Monday. He's a popular guy in the dressing room. What do the players think if you take the captaincy off him? So, you know, it's not just, it's a fairly multifaceted clusterfuck, you might say. But something else that kind of got on my nerves a bit this week was this idea that somehow Arsenal fans are terrible fans because of what happened with Granit Xhaka. And I take exception to that, to be honest. Like, as if we are somehow the worst fans in the history of football of all time ever because of what happened to Xhaka. And the fact that he was jeered, the fact that his number came up, and, you know, let's look at it. He did get jeered, and that's not nice, but he also invited more of that jeering and more of that opprobrium from the crowd by the way that he behaved when he went off, you know, waving his arms and cupping his ear and saying, like, come on, give it to me then. Give it to me. You gave it to me, I'll give you a bit back, which, you know, I'm all right with that, really. But let's say, and let's put it out there, that you can think that Xhaka getting booed and jeered was not nice, but also think that Xhaka was in the wrong for the way that he behaved. I think those two things can go hand in hand. But this idea that somehow, because this happened, Arsenal fans en masse are terrible fans is absolutely absurd. Like, we are not the only fans in football who have ever booed one of our players. You can go back to last season where there was, you know, footage of Paul Pogba being roundly abused by United fans at Old Trafford. Maybe not in the same circumstances as we saw with Xhaka, but depending on your point of view, you might even say that that's worse. This was absolutely specific targeted abuse, calling him names, people fronting up to him and giving out to him. And this was sort of more pantomime, if you want to call it that. But it happens at lots of clubs where fans, and I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong, I'm just saying that this happens. That players, managers, and, you know, owners, they become the targets of fan frustration and fan ire and all those kind of things. And we're not alone in that. And yes, anyone who sent threats to Granit Xhaka on social media, anyone who abused him over his new baby, anyone who abused his wife is an idiot. Maybe worse than that. I'm sure you can think of plenty of names that you could call those people, but they are not representative of the vast majority of Arsenal fans. So I think it's unfair to say, well, Xhaka got this abuse, which of course is unacceptable. There's no condoning it on any level. But that abuse came from idiots who happen to be Arsenal fans. And that's the way they should be categorized, first and foremost. Idiots who happen to be Arsenal fans, rather than Arsenal fans, that somehow we as a fan base have to take collective responsibility for the behavior of what you can only describe as extremists in a way, because that kind of behavior, that kind of language, which is threatening, which is abusive, which threatens the safety, perhaps, even though we all know this is like keyboard warrior kind of stuff, because these people are sitting far, far away and most of them are anonymous, and they are who they are, and they are not to be conflated with normal, regular, reasonable Arsenal fans who may like Xhaka or dislike Xhaka, who agree with Xhaka or who don't agree with Xhaka, but who can take a sensible, logical, mannerly, nuanced view of what's happened, because they are the vast, vast majority of people. Similarly, you have a person abusing Aubameyang on the street, and it gets amplified to the point where people go, oh, Arsenal fans, they're so terrible. Look at them. They abuse their own players. No, that is one person who feels self-entitled or feels like the norms of society don't apply to them. The video goes up on social media. It goes viral and everyone goes, look at Arsenal fans. They're absolute assholes. But that's not Arsenal fans. That's an Arsenal fan or a purported Arsenal fan behaving in a way that they shouldn't behave. I mean, it shouldn't really need to be said that one person acting in a fucking stupid, cunty way doesn't mean that everybody else who happens to support the same football team would behave in that way or condones that kind of behavior. And it's not unique to Arsenal, because there are cunts who support Man United and Liverpool and Tottenham. Well, all of them. Tottenham, of course, are cunts. And every football club up and down the land. And it is not just a football thing. It's not just about football. This kind of behavior is endemic in society. I think it's a symptom, perhaps, of social media. And we see it across all facets of life these days. That one person doing something absurd is seen as representative of that entire group of people. And it's really not the case. And I don't really think that Arsenal fans should be made feel guilty by media reports, by some of the more holier-than-thou fans, the ones who might take it upon themselves to like apologize on behalf of the entire Arsenal fan base to Aubameyang because one person said something stupid to him. It feels almost patronizing in a way, because I look at that and I think, well, you know what? I reckon that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is smart enough to realize that one individual shouting and screaming at him doesn't mean that all Arsenal fans think the same way. So there's no need to apologize to him for the actions of that one person. So while what happened to Xhaka wasn't nice, it's not the end of the world. If it causes a bit of introspection or people to step back and look at things a bit more objectively, that's all well and good. I think we could do with a bit more of that in general. But I take exception to this idea that Arsenal fans are the worst. We have our wankers. Of course we do. But in every subset of society, you have them. There are doctors who are wankers. There are dentists who are wankers. Pilots who are wankers. Politicians who are wankers. Most politicians, they're sort of the Tottenham fans of society in many ways. Whatever way you want to categorize people, there are going to be some of them that are just wankers. There's nothing we can really do about that. That's the human condition. But let's not fall into the trap of thinking that it's all of us, because most of us, I think, are all right. At least most of us listening to this, I'm sure. Thank you for indulging me on that one. Let's get on with the show. And joining me now to talk about the, The events at Anfield on Wednesday night when Arsenal played a 5-5 draw with Liverpool and ended up losing 5-4 on penalties. In the Carabao Cup, Mesut Ozil's return, the Granit Xhaka situation, which is still ongoing, as I mentioned there a couple of minutes ago. I'm delighted to welcome back to the Arsecast Charles Watts from Goal. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Andrew, mate. How you getting on?
I'm good, thanks. You were at the game. Leaving aside the result and the performances and all the things that we're going to talk about in a moment, what were your thoughts on it overall? Because it was a pretty remarkable night. Extraordinary scoreline, a penalty shootout. And maybe the biggest regret of this is that the best nights or the most fun nights that Arsenal have had this season have come in cup competitions, and now we've got one less.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it was a remarkable night to try and sit there in the press box in the second half and write your report and sort of get the theme of how it's going to go. At one point you thought, yes, is it Arsenal doing comfortably? And then suddenly the comeback was on with Liverpool 4-4. And I think when Joe stuck that one in the top corner, I thought yeah, surely that's it now. It's Arsenal. It's Arsenal's to lose. And somehow they did manage to lose it. Still, the only Arsenal that lost that game. It was a remarkable game to sit there and witness. And I think it fell on the same day 7 years on from that Reading 5, Arsenal 7. So October the 30th seems to be a day that brings goals when Arsenal were in Carabao League Cup action. It was pretty remarkable.
Twice Arsenal had a 2-goal lead, which they got pegged back with, and leading well into injury time. I know we can talk about, you know, game management and ultimately what it might mean in the grand scheme of things, but I think there were positives for Arsenal on the night. There's no question about that. Like, it's weird to say it, that on a night when you concede 5 goals and people say, what positives? You know, you let 5 goals in. Well, we also scored 5 goals, which is a genuine positive. And I think the main one for me is Gabriel Martinelli, the young Brazilian who has now scored 7 goals this season. He's only a goal behind Aubameyang in the top scorer list. And the more you look at him, the more you think, holy crap, we have really discovered or uncovered a talent here.
Yeah, I mean, he's hit the ground running, hasn't he? He looks like you kind of have to want to hold yourself back from going too far with him. But like you said, he looks like one hell of a talent. The mad thing is that so many other teams had a really good look at Martinelli in the couple of years before Arsenal got the deal done. You know, he was at Man United, he was at Barcelona, and no one took a punt on him. His plan's always been to come over to Europe. He's been desperate for it. It's all been part of this big project that him and his team have set up. And yeah, like I said, he's been over here. He's had trials. He's had stays with clubs, training sessions, and Arsenal took the punt, and it looks like it's worked out. I mean, 7 goals already. He scored in his first 4 starts. He got to go back to Wrighty to find someone who's done that.
That was funny, actually. I noticed that on Twitter. On Twitter last night when you mentioned that, and Ian Wright comes in and goes, tag me in next time.
Tag me. Sorry, Wrighty, I will do next time. And he's a top scoring teenager in Europe's top 5 leagues as well. I mean, it's been a wonderful start from him. And I know Unai Emery says that he still sees him as a winger, that Martinelli sees himself as a winger. But when he plays in that central striker role, his finishing is pretty much on point. I mean, there are a couple of chances yesterday he didn't take, I suppose. But his movement, his work rate, I mean, for a team, I mean, Emery likes his team to press. That's what he's always said. But for a team that he wants to press, not many of his players actually do that. but Martinelli certainly does. I mean, defenders hate him. Even Arsenal defenders hate playing against him in training. He's just horrible. He's like that annoying wasp that doesn't leave you alone in the summer when you're sitting in a beer garden.
Yeah.
And he does look one hell of a talent. And anyway, what more has he got to do to start starting in the Premier League? It's going to be tough because he's got Aubameyang and Lacazette ahead of him in that forward role. But when you look at his numbers and what he's producing when he's on the pitch, it's going to be tough for Emery to continue leaving him out in the Premier League.
I think he really is making a case for himself to start games. And look, as centre forward, when you've got Aubameyang and Lacazette, you know, that is a more difficult job. But, you know, it does feel like maybe there's somebody who could come into that front three and balance things, because there is that question, is like, how do you get Aubameyang and Lacazette into the same team at the same time? You know, Lacazette is the centre forward guy, and Aubameyang is the guy who has to play who has to play wide. And look, he has scored goals there for Arsenal, but there's no question that it doesn't really get the best out of him. And we could see it in the game against Crystal Palace, where he had fewer touches than any other Arsenal player by quite a long way. So he was quite isolated there. Whereas Martinelli looks like he could come in and give it a bit of balance. And you talk about the pressing thing. You know, there was a moment last night where I had to do a double take because he pressed one of the defenders at one point and they moved the ball away from him, and he was sort of gesturing for other people to come along and press with him. It really looked like Alexis Sanchez when he used to do the same thing, where he would press, and he'd look behind him and everyone's standing there watching him going, look at him doing that pressing thing, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so long you can leave him out when he's producing what he's producing when given an opportunity, no matter what his age, no matter who he's got in front of him. There is only so long you can leave a player out. And I mean, you talk about this Nicolas Pepe over on the right as well. We all want Pepe to do well. Arsenal were desperate for him to do well. They've shelled out such a big amount of money on him. But if he's not producing, and Martinelli is, then, you know, if Emery really does see Martinelli as a wide man, then, you know, he could perhaps play on the right, and then you can still accommodate Lacazette and Aubameyang if you really want to do that. So there is, like you said, there is opportunity for him to be brought into that Premier League 11. It's and if he keeps going the way he is, it's going to be hard. The only issue for him now, obviously, he's only got the Europa League. He hasn't got the League Cup anymore to make his mark because well, we all know how it all ended last night.
Yeah. Look, he does have some Europa League games to come. I think there's three more group games to come. So, you know, even more chances for him to hammer down the door. Joe Willock and Ainsley Maitland-Niles, two young men who've had a bit of a difficult time of late. Willock was taken off at halftime in two successive games, and you can question the man management there from Unai Emery. At the same time, you would have to admit that he didn't in those games hit the heights that he has earlier in the season. Maitland-Niles, since Callum Chambers has gone to right back and Hector Bellerin is back in, making his way back from that injury, you know, his chances have been limited as well. But, you know, over the course of a long season, we're going to need the entire squad. And this idea that we can just write off young players because they've had a couple of bad games seems a bit counterintuitive to me. So to see them both get on the score sheet, you know, I know they had their moments where perhaps things didn't go right, but Maitland-Niles got a goal and Joe Willock also got a goal, and probably the goal of the night, maybe between him and Oxlade-Chamberlain for the long-range screamer. But it was, you know, it was great to see them come through and just remind people that they've got a bit about them.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't write players, the young players, off just because they had a couple of bad games. Like, it wasn't long ago everyone was raving about Joe Willock and saying he should be playing at number 10 in the Premier League 11. So just because he's had a couple of bad games, you're going to get that with youngsters. They're inconsistent, aren't they? That's what young players are. And, Willock's goal was amazing. I couldn't stop thinking about Vieira's goal against Newcastle.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just like a carbon copy of it. And fantastic strike. And Ainsley Maitland-Niles as well. He's had a tough time. I think he's struggling. He's been moved from one position that wasn't his to now playing in another position that not his, and he's not getting a chance in his favourite central role. But he did well last night. I mean, we talk about pressing and jumping on opportunities. He certainly did that for the fourth goal. You know, he seized on Milner's back pass, and obviously it really couldn't miss, really, because of the artistry of Ozil and that wonderful flick he produced. It was good for them both. I saw Ian Wright again on social media saying, you know, well done to those two, and echoing your words, really, that they've had a tough couple of weeks, and it was good to see them come out of it and get a goal and hopefully sort of move forward. Unfortunately, they both limped very, very heavily through the mix zone after the game. So did Sierre Kolasinac. I think the three of those players are going to struggle for the weekend because they didn't look in the best of shape, I have to admit.
Yeah, Willock picked up a knock, didn't he, in the first half? It looked like a fairly substantial one. I didn't see what happened to Maitland-Niles, and Kolasinac came off late. I think with Kolasinac, at least, there is the idea that Kieran Tierney is now the Premier League left-back. Yeah. So, you know, that's fine. Willock maybe wouldn't be playing on Saturday anyway, perhaps because of the re-emergence, if you like, of one man you mentioned him there, Mesut Ozil, who was back in the squad, back in the team. And, you know, you can say whatever you like, not you in particular, but people can say what they like about, you know, well, it was just the Carabao Cup, it was just Liverpool. But it was one of those games where traditionally you wouldn't say the circumstances were ideal for Mesut Ozil. You know, it's away from home, it's against a good team, even if it's not necessarily their strongest team. I thought he played really well. he played so well, it made me wonder, you know, why he hasn't been in the team, or at least on the bench, for the last couple of games. You know, there was no suggestion that he was gassed after 45 minutes. What did you make of his performance first? And I want to ask you about what might happen next afterwards.
I thought he was fantastic. I thought he was the best player on the pitch by an absolute mile for the first 65 minutes. Just like you, I was keen to see how he was going to cope, having been out for 5 weeks, thrown back into the sort of lion's pit, really, that can be Anfield on a night game. And I didn't understand, people were moaning in the build-up to it, having to go at Emery saying, oh, he's throwing Ozil under a bus playing him there. It's like, well, I didn't get that. It was like, look, he's got his chance now. We've all wanted him to get his chance. He's got a chance. Who cares who it's against and where it is? At least he's got a chance to make his mark. And he certainly did that. I mean, I thought he was absolutely brilliant. And in a game, it was a crazy game. I mean, when there's 10 goals, there's a game littered with mistakes. And he was the one standout player in terms of class. Everything he did really was quality on the ball. I think he had a 92% pass rate at the end of it. He obviously had the one assist, which was just brilliant. I mean, any normal player would have slid in then, panicking, trying to just sweep it in from a tight angle, making the wrong decision, because he probably wouldn't have been able to score it. But Ozil, just the calmness in that situation to know exactly what he was going to do and produce the drag back and the flick for Maitland-Niles, was just so good. And the same for the Martinelli second goal with that little flick for Saka. And even the first goal, he was the reverse pass for Maitland-Niles, then the ball to Saka as well. Everything that Arsenal's been lacking in the last, certainly in the whole season, really, he produced it. I thought he was great, and it kind of made a mockery of what we all know is a ridiculous situation, decision from Unai Emery and those above him, which I do think there is those above him agreeing with leaving him out. So it's just hurting Arsenal, and it's hurting Emery, and he can't afford to let it hurt him anymore because the pressure's increasing on him, by the way.
Yeah, what did you make of his quotes last week where he said, you know, this is a club strategy, I think is what he said. I mean, it feels to me like perhaps something got lost in translation there a bit, because, you know, if that's your strategy, why are you then picking him? If your strategy is to leave him out, why are you picking him for a game like this? You know, it didn't quite sit right with me.
Strategy is maybe the wrong word, but let me clarify.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Do you think that when it comes to Emery's selection decisions, what he means by saying it's a club strategy is that if he decides to leave Mesut Ozil out of the squad entirely, then the club are okay with that, that they're backing his decisions or not undermining his decisions from an executive point of view? Do you think it's more about that rather than they've all sat around and thought, how do we piss off Mesut Ozil and how do we get rid of him?
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's been some strategy around a board, or a sort of World War II bunker trying to work out how to force Ozil out. I think it's very much a case of Unai has been given the green light to do what he wants to do. I don't think the club are going to shed any tears if they can manage to get Ozil out of his contract early and get him off the wage bill. And look, Emery's not strong enough. He's not a powerful figure. He's not got 20 years behind him like Arsene Wenger. He's just a head coach, and he's not going to be able to leave out the club's highest earner, who has raked in whatever amount of millions he's raked in since the start of the season, just leave him out without getting the green light from the board. They've got to give him the okay to continue to do that. And like I said, I don't think it's a strategy, but he's certainly doing it with their blessing, and I think he would need their blessing to do it, because I just don't think he's a strong enough character within the club to actually do it himself.
So what about the substitution then, when he took him off at 65 minutes? You know, at the time watching it, it felt really it felt like a bad change, because he was playing so well, and then B, subsequently, I think we lost a measure of control in the game that he was giving us. The counter argument, of course, is that he's barely played this season. He's tired. He's fatigued. He didn't look tired to me. But also, when he came off, he didn't really look that unhappy in the same way that he did in, for example, the game against Nottingham Forest when he was taken off after 70 minutes. Some suggestion that this was to give him some minutes ahead of the weekend's game against Wolves. I mean, what was your reading of the change, and do you think that he is in contention to start against Wolves?
Well, I think he knew that the change was going to happen. Emery said after the game it was a great performance and he was going to play 60, 65 minutes just because he hadn't played too much football. I agree with you. When I saw his number go up, I let out a big sigh in the press box. I was like, why are you doing that? He's the best player on the pitch. He didn't look absolutely knackered. And you're right, I thought Arsenal did lose a lot of
control and they lost a lot of quality once he went off, because there was no one really to put their foot on the ball. He was the only one doing that with a genuine touch of class to calm things down amid the madness. But like I said, I think it was a prearranged thing, given his lack of game time, lack of minutes. And Emery said that, it was always going to happen. And he also said that it was done in view of Saturday, and perhaps he was going to have an involvement in that one. And I mean, look, he has to start on Saturday. He can't. There was always a danger for Emery that when he did this, when he played him again, that Ozil was going to produce the type of performance that made it impossible for him to continue leaving him out. And I think he's done that at Anfield. I just don't see, when Arsenal are playing badly, they're not scoring goals, they're not creating chances, not winning. They've only won two of the last eight Premier League games.
Yeah.
The last seven goals they've scored in the Premier League, only two have been from open play. If the forwards aren't doing something special, then Arsenal aren't winning, they're not creating, they're not scoring goals. And you've got three top quality forwards there and you've got no supply line. And all that time, you've got Mesut Ozil sitting in the sand. So it's just, you can't continue with it. And he has to start. There's no more excuses for Emery, I'm afraid. He's got to bite the bullet, except he was wrong. Whatever talks he's had with Raul and Edu about the whole situation, they've got to say, look, it's not working and it's biting us here, and we've got to play Mesut Ozil. And it would be madness not to start him on Saturday, especially against the Wolves team, who are going to sit deep, give Arsenal a lot of time on the ball, and say to Arsenal, okay, you try and unlock us. And if Ozil's not in the team, they're going to struggle to unlock him. And you've got a much better chance of breaking down a team that is going to try and play on the counter-attack if you've got real quality in that central area. And Mesut Ozil's quality.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you were being cynical, you might think that Emery bringing him back into the team at this point is, you know, not trying to save his own job, but like, at some point your principled stance goes by the wayside because of expediency, because you need somebody to address the issues in the team that you haven't been able to address until now. And I really do, I think it's quite funny, and I don't mean this from what you said specifically, but just the idea that we frame this as there was a danger for Emery that Ozil might come in and play well. I mean, that's, for Arsenal, that's a great thing if Ozil comes in and plays well. But for the manager who's had this stance for most of the season where he's left Ozil out, I guess it is a danger, but it just sort of it depends on your perspective, how you perceive that, whether it's a dangerous thing or not.
But it makes him look stupid, doesn't it? It makes him look like he's hurt himself and he's hurt the team with this stance that he's taken. None of us could really understand it, could we? It's just been a baffling situation. He hates it. You know, every press conference we ask him, every single game that Ozil's not involved, we ask him. And he hates it. He hates just the mention of the name because he knows he has to answer another question on it. But if you're continuing to leave out your best creator, your highest paid player, then you're going to face questions on it. And it's just been such a baffling scenario, especially when he played so well in pre-season and looked like he was really ready. Emery looked like he was really ready to sort of build his side around Ozil this season. And then suddenly, after what happened with the security issues, and I don't know what happened behind the scenes following that and how Ozil reacted to it all, but all of a sudden, the player that he really put a lot of trust in pre-season was nowhere to be seen. And it was, it's just been a difficult situation for everyone. But he's got to accept he was wrong now and start playing him, because it's just, like I said, it's just hurting Arsenal, and Arsenal are struggling and Emery's struggling. You know, if things go wrong this week, if he loses at Wolves, if he loses at Leicester, then the rational boat's going to roll around, and it's the unbelievable pressure. You've already got Jose and his people putting out his name in the media, and yeah, exactly. I mean, I spoke to someone at Arsenal who said there's absolutely no way that would ever happen, an appointment like that would ever happen, and the club would never go down that sort of route, and which made me feel a hell of a lot better about it all. But, you know, just the fact that Mourinho's name is being mentioned and that his people are putting the feelers out like that, it shows the pressure that is on Emery, and he's got to get results quickly, because Arsenal, it's a different regime at Arsenal now, and, you know, Raul's come from Barcelona, he's ruthless. He is, from people I've spoken to about Raul, he's not going to mess around if results continue to go south. And if Arsenal are looking like they're not even going to put up a challenge for the top four. So Emery has to start consistently getting results. And he's got a better chance of doing that with Ozil on the team.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true, which sort of comes back to my point about expediency and what have you. Because if something that serious had happened, that Ozil was being left out of the team, you know, you can be quite sure it would have leaked in order to cover somebody's arse. And the point about our Premier League form, 2 wins in 8, you know, that's just not sustainable in any way if you want to continue a challenge for the top four. I know it's early in the season. I know, well, relatively early in the season. We're heading towards a third of the season being gone at this point. Results do have to improve, and I think if he doesn't win against Wolves and if he doesn't win against Leicester, I think he could be gone. And last night, when we talk about the result, ultimately, you know, disappointing to lose a game when you've been 3-1 up, you've been 4-2 up, you were 5-4 up in the last minute or so. It is worrying and feeds into this overall malaise that seems to be around the club at this moment in time. What was your view on the inability to see out that game? I mean, if his in-game management involved taking Ozil off to keep him fresh for Saturday, I think probably there was something similar with Lucas Torreira, because the Xhaka situation, which we'll talk about in a minute, probably means he's not going to be available at the weekend. So Torreira could be in line for a rare Premier League start. But just before we talk about that, your thoughts on not being able to see that game out? How does it reflect on Emery in the context of everything else that's going on?
Yeah, look, it was disappointing. And I spoke to Emi Martinez after the game in the mix zone, and he said it himself, that it was for the players in there, they're all devastated that they couldn't hold on. They led 3-1, they led 4-2. Both occasions they conceded goals pretty much straight away, like the penalty just before half time, which, by the way, I'm pretty sure was a dive.
It was.
And yeah, it was a dive. I know Torreira was offside as well, so it kind of evens it out. But at least that was a wrong refereeing decision, or a mistake. It wasn't cheating, which I thought Liverpool one was. And then the 4-2 as well, they just got themselves in that commanding position again, and then they conceded. I mean, there's not much you can do when Ox turns and smacks one in the top corner like that. But it's just every time they seemed in a real position of power in the game, they conceded. And then, yeah, obviously right at the very end, it was a decent finish by Origi, but I think they should have probably done more to close the guy down out on the right and stop the cross coming in. It's just something we've seen time and time again with Arsenal, isn't it? They can't close out games. They can't hold on to leads. And it was disappointing. The substitutions didn't help, I would say. I thought Ozil probably could have stayed on and would have controlled things a lot more in the central areas. I thought Torreira was playing all right. But you've got to look ahead to the weekend as well. And given what's going on with Xhaka at the moment, you expect Torreira is probably going to start against Wolves. So you can see why he did that. And right at the end, he was going to bring Laka on and had to change his mind because Kolasinac got the injury and Tierney had to come on. So, you know, if Lacazette was on the pitch, he probably would have taken a penalty. He would have taken a penalty, wouldn't he? So yeah. Maybe Arsenal would have had more chance in a shootout. But it's one of those things. It was a crazy game. I think game management goes out the window kind of in those sort of matches. We've seen it before, haven't we? The 5-4 at White Hart Lane, the 7-5 at Reading, the 5-all last night. It's just one of those nights where the, you know, mistakes are all over the place. People are sticking them in the top corner from all over the place. It was just a remarkable game of football.
Yeah, a classic cup rope-a-dope encounter, if you like, where the two teams are really having a go at each other. But it, you know, it is difficult sometimes, isn't it, to look at, you know, defensive mistakes and, you know, what it might mean for the character of the team or the mindset of the team, you know, to lose a 2-goal lead twice, you know, as we did against Crystal Palace, as we did against Watford earlier in the season. It's not more of the same. And look, I'm not that fussed about going out of the Carabao Cup, to be honest. You know, we have bigger fish to fry, and you know, he didn't really risk any of his big players in last night's game for no reason because he was under pressure. So, you know, I'm on board with the team selection. But just, you know, overall, it seems to be part of the struggle that we're going through at this moment.
Yeah, well, it's just another defeat, isn't it, at the end of the day? It's another defeat. Another game goes by without Arsenal getting a win, and they're struggling to get wins in whatever competition it is at the moment, and that can't keep going on, certainly not for the manager or the coach. And they've got to get out of this little rut they're in, and they had a good opportunity to do that. And it's difficult to win at Anfield, no matter what team you're playing against. It's very, very difficult. They haven't lost there since September last year in any competition, and you've got to feel that Arsenal should have ended that run last night, but they didn't, and it's certainly going to affect those players on the pitch. I mean, Martinez was gutted afterwards. I mean, he prides himself on his penalties as well, and he was really disappointed that he only went the right way once. He just said it was one of those nights for him where things didn't work out, and I think defensively that was the case again. Arsenal just couldn't deal with balls they perhaps should have dealt with. I think they, like I said, should have done better with a fifth goal and Mustafi with a first goal. I mean, that's just an absolute howler of a error that sums up his time at Arsenal, really. And it was a disappointing night in that regard, and there's certainly going to be some players who going to feel it in terms of the back line. But like you said at the start, there was definite positives to take out of this one as well going forward. And no one's going to shed too many tears about going out of that competition.
No, I mean, I don't think that's the thing that will define Unai Emery's job. It's just another little notch on the bedpost, if you like. That's a weird analogy to make there, but it's just the weight of evidence is mounting. That's kind of what I'm trying to say here.
No, absolutely.
Let's just talk a little bit about Granit Xhaka then, because at the time of talking, it's Thursday afternoon. We haven't heard a thing yet from Granit Xhaka, the club captain. The club's response has been to sort of frame it in a certain way, in that like he's sad and he's down and he's devastated and they want to support him and everything else. Depending on who you talk to, the player's point of view or the player's mindset might be a little less sad and a bit more angry. What is your take on the fact that we 4 days later still haven't heard a single word from Granit Xhaka about what happened on Sunday? And whatever way you want to frame it and however you feel fans behaved or anything like it, you can also think that what Xhaka did was wrong. And B, what do you think of how the club have handled this? Should they have been stronger? Should they have shown a bit more conviction in the way that it's been dealt with?
Yes, 100%. But I think that Emery's pathetic decision, really, in the summer, or later on in the summer, in fact, to put this to a vote, put the captaincy to a vote, is coming back to bite him on this one, his indecisiveness in the summer. Because Xhaka's not his captain, he's the player's captain. I know Emery's got to give the green light to it all and ultimately name the skipper, but the fact it's all been put out as, you know, a player's vote and everything like that, I think Emery's in a really, really weak position now, because he's come out, he said he wants Xhaka to apologise, he said it publicly, and yet 4 days, 5 days after, Xhaka said nothing. And the club have been putting a lot of pressure on him. Xhaka was in on Monday with Emery's, Raul and Edu. They all wanted him to apologise, they're all urging him to apologise, but Xhaka's not doing it. Yes, he's devastated, he's sad at what's happened, but in terms of what I've been told, he's refusing to apologise at the moment, because he's like you said, he feels angry, pissed off more than sad in terms of how the fans
remorseful.
Feel.
Yeah,
he thinks this is more. It's more than just Sunday. This has been something that's been building for an awful long time in terms of him. The abuse he's had to take, the ironic cheers at substitutions, what's gone on social media, and it all sort of came to a head on Sunday. And he doesn't feel like he should be apologising at the moment because of the abuse he's had to endure since being at Arsenal. And, you know, whether that changes, I mean, look, his captain's note is going to be interesting on Saturday. If nothing's come out before then, his captain's note will certainly be interesting.
Just a picture of him standing there with two middle fingers up.
Yeah, basically, that's going to be it. And you know, as soon as, I think for Emery, it was a nice little sort of welcome relief, the game on Wednesday night, because it's all he's been really thinking about since Sunday. But now as soon as he got back on the coach, that problem's going to raise its head again. He's got a press conference tomorrow, Unai, and if Arsenal once again haven't put anything out, they're going to let him face the music for a second time in a week. Then he's going to have to deal with a lot of uncomfortable questions. And then you've got the match on Saturday. And like I said, the programme notes may sort of be a jokey thing, but it's actually a thing. It's is he going to write them? Is he going to be there? Are they going to remove it completely? What's going to happen? And
what's he going to say?
I mean, Arsenal got to be strong. They've just got to be strong with it. But because, like Emi Martinez last night, we spoke to him about it. He's the first Arsenal fan really to sit down and talk about the situation. And he says that the players absolutely back Granit Xhaka. He's their leader, and they support him. They've been rallying around him, and they support him. And that's the problem Emery has. He's, by throwing it out to the players, by effectively giving them the power, he now risks alienating his entire dressing room if he makes a firm decision and, you know, say strips Xhaka of the captaincy or anything like that against all the squad's wishes. And he's in a difficult situation, but I do think a lot of it's down to himself and the way he managed the whole captain situation in the summer. And we all knew Koscielny was going. For the moment he went on strike, we knew he was going, and the new captain needed to be picked, and he didn't do it until the end of September. I mean, what is that about? It was so ridiculous. And it was just another example of Emery being indecisive, something that's all the clubs he's been at before has been said about him, and I think he's dug himself a hole now, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out. Because Xhaka is a complex character. He's passionate. You speak to anyone behind it. And it's not just Xhaka, it's his dad as well. Really, really stubborn, some will say, and passionate, and they firmly have their own beliefs. And you're not going to convince Xhaka to do something he doesn't want to do. You're really not going to be able to pressure him into it. So unless Xhaka has to change your heart, then it's going to be a situation that rumbles on for a fair bit yet.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I do agree with you about Emery. The indecision and the prevarication over making Xhaka the captain, and then not necessarily putting it entirely to a player's vote, but using the player's vote, it sort of undermined his authority in a big way. And I think Amy Lawrence hinted at something like that in the Athletic piece that she wrote, that Xhaka himself was frustrated about how long it took to make the decision when it could have been made back in August or when they were away on tour. You know, that could have happened back then. I mean, do you think there's a way back for Xhaka without an apology? Is that something he has to do to sort of clear the air? Because if fans are willing to forgive Xhaka for the way they feel he behaved, if he feels that fans should also have some remorse for the abuse that he's been given, it's not a one-way street. It has to come from both sides, doesn't it? So if there's going to be like a rapprochement, like next time Xhaka comes onto the pitch and there's this generous, if somewhat guilty, applause for him, it can't happen without him extending the olive branch the other way a little.
Yeah. I mean, do you think there's going to be general applause for him when he comes on the pitch?
Well, I mean, it depends. It depends what he says. I mean, without addressing it, or without sort of at least holding his hands up and saying, look, what I did was wrong, but this is why I did it, or this is why I felt I did it. You know, he could, you know, I'm not saying he's going to win everybody back, but if he just sort of says nothing, then it will continue to fester, won't it?
Yeah. No, he has to say something. He has to address it. He can't act like nothing's happened and just hope it all goes on the table, because it's not going to happen. But I don't really want him to make this apology, this big apology, if he doesn't mean it and it comes across like that. So it's got to be carefully managed, whatever happens. But look, I think it's the beginning of the end for Xhaka at Arsenal. I can't see him being there next season. I think that it's going to be very, very difficult. He wasn't popular in the start of it, but I think irreversible damage is going to be done over this. The next time he gets himself sent off, the next time he gives away a penalty, the next time he gives away a goal, which is going to happen because it's Granit Xhaka, it's all going to come back at him again. And I think it's a long way back for Xhaka. He might well play again this season. I'm sure he probably will play again this season and will probably become a regular in the team again at some point during the season. But I think long term, I think what happened on Sunday is the beginning of the end for Xhaka at Arsenal.
All right, just very finally on this, if we talk about Emery perhaps having a lack of authority in the situation, or the situation being complicated for him by the fact that the players absolutely back Xhaka and they are behind him, and that does make it awkward for him to sort of say, right, I'm stripping you of the captaincy, I'm making somebody else captain, etc., etc. You know, if he's faced with that position, do we have to maybe step back and say, okay, well, Emery is the head coach, and that there are people at the football club with more authority than him? So we've got a head of football in Raul Sanyehi. We've got a technical director in Edu. There is a committee at the club who look after all footballing matters. Is this something that, unless Emery can find a solution or find a way to deal with it, and if Xhaka continues to refuse to apologize or address the situation in any meaningful way beyond changing his Instagram profile, is it not incumbent on them to sort it out?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're trying their best to do that. And it's going to have to happen at some point. Someone's going to have to make final decision on the whole situation. Because I think everyone, like you said earlier, it can't be allowed to just rumble on and be swept under the carpet. It's going to have to come to a head some way or the other. And Emery's very public statement that Xhaka has to apologise and should apologise has put Emery in a situation now where if he doesn't apologise, then once again, he looks very, very weak. And, the thing that's going to help him is that Raul and Edu both think Xhaka should apologise as well, and they know the importance of an apology in terms of, you know, just getting Xhaka back out on the pitch at some point for the rest of the season. So I think the pressure from above is going to be increasing the longer that it goes on without Xhaka saying anything. And both of them, they'll be, I'm sure they're in London Colney again today, trying to deal with the situation. Everyone was well aware of just the whole captain's note thing on Saturday. Again, although I was sort of joking about it, it is a topic of discussion at Arsenal, yeah, about what exactly is going to happen there. And so I feel like something's going to be said before Saturday. I'll be very surprised, yeah, if we go into that game without some sort of official response, and not just Unai Emery's comments in his press conference tomorrow, but some sort of official response that includes comments from probably one of the footballing committee and Xhaka himself.
Well, it's a good job we have five captains. So if Xhaka still refuses, we can pick one of the other four to do the notes for Saturday.
Give it to Hector. Honestly, you should have given it to Hector in the first place. Yeah. Definitely give it to him now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on board. Listen, we better leave it there. I know you're pushed for time, but appreciate you talking to me, Charles. Thanks very much.
No worries. Cheers, Andrew, mate.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you very much indeed to Charles. You can find him on Twitter at @Charles_Watts. That's @Charles_Watts. And that's just about that from the Carabao Cup for this season. Liverpool 5, Arsenal 5. Wouldn't it be great if they got the movie trailer guy? You know the guy, like, one man isolated and alone comes in from the dark. Mesut Ozil is the Returninator or whatever. Like, I want that guy to read the classified football results. Please, somebody make that happen, if you could. I'd appreciate it. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, you will know that we are fans of a good bit of foreign language commentary when it comes to Arsenal. We try and include some of them in the intros to the Arscast Extra, but I did like this one from Wednesday night. It comes from Bein Sport. And this is the Joe Willock goal.
Frappe! Mais oui! Mais oui! Mais oui! Une soirée où on peut tout tenter! Joe Willock!
I'm not sure what I like more, the actual commentator or the guy just breaking his shit laughing in the background at what was just a crazy, incredible game of football. It was like, what the fuck is going to happen next? Maybe Liverpool might even get a late equaliser. Oh, anyway, look, we draw a line under that. We move on because this weekend we've got Premier League football. We face Wolves at the Emirates in a game on a Saturday, which is so, so strange because it feels like we've been locked into this Thursday-Sunday grind for ages now. But it is a Saturday game. The first 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday that we have had so far this season. Not that that's the most important thing, but it's still a bit sad to feel like this is the exception, the very rare exception, and not the norm. The most important thing, of course, is that Arsenal win this game and take 3 points because league form has not been good. 2 wins from our last 8. We played Sheffield United and we played Crystal Palace, games from which you would have expected Arsenal, well, an Arsenal that are ambitious enough to be going for the top 4 to win. As usual, with all due respect to the opposition, blah, blah, blah. But it's 1 point from the last 6 and 2 wins from the last 8. So anything other than a win against Wolves on Saturday is going to see the pressure mount on Unai Emery considerably, as it should, if we don't win this home game against Wolves. But also, the gap between Arsenal and the top 4 probably grow even wider. And the wider that grows, the closer it comes to the time when the people running the football club have got a decision to make. Because if we don't finish in the top 4 this season, it will have been a failure, I think, based on the squad that we have. and the players that we have to not finish in the top four based on what's going on around us and some of the problems that the other teams are having, I think that would be a failure. And the longer it goes in this run of form, which unfortunately stretches back to the end of last season as well, the more difficult it's going to be for us to achieve that goal, which is our main goal this season. Whether you like it, whether you think we should be more ambitious, realistically, we're not title challengers. We all know that. So getting into the top four is our be-all and end-all, really. And then we can build from there. That's the whole point. We build from there. But I feel like more and more, I feel like we've got good ingredients, but it increasingly looks like we've got the wrong chef. And unless he can find the blend of herbs and spices, you know what I mean? But unless he can bring things together quickly, our season is in danger of becoming a real scrap. A real scrap. And it's not that it would be easy to get into the top four, but you have to at some point look at a run of form that a team is on and ask, is the coach the right guy to get us out of it? The team on Saturday, it's got to include Mesut Ozil. It has to. We're going to bring in Aubameyang. We're going to bring in Pepe. Lacazette will probably start. So you've got potentially the chance to see what many believe is the right way for us to connect midfield and attack, which is with Ozil being a creator. But also with the absence of Xhaka, the double pivot of Torreira and Guendouzi is something that we've been eager to see. And circumstances dictate that that's probably going to be the midfield two that Unai Emery is going to pick. And hopefully it works. Hopefully it produces a better performance than we've seen in recent weeks. And realistically, throughout most of this season, the performances in Premier League terms have not been great. So with a difficult trip away to Leicester next weekend, anything less than 3 points on Saturday against Wolves is going to be another black mark for the coach. I think that we have the talent and the ability and the players to do better and to play better than we are right now. And I hope we see the team perform on Saturday. I hope that we can take 3 points. But I worry a little bit because, well, you saw what happened in midweek. You saw what happened against Crystal Palace. You saw what happened against Watford. You've all watched the games this season where we haven't been convincing in Premier League terms. So, look, the most important thing is for us to get points on the board. Other decisions can come in tandem with that. And hopefully, when James and I are speaking on Monday morning in the Arsecast Extra, we are talking about a good Arsenal win. Because we need those points. The last couple of games have been really, really damaging, and we need to get ourselves back on track. Just a reminder that if you want to support us on Patreon and get ad-free podcasts, you get ad-free apps for iOS and for Android and lots more besides, join us on Patreon, patreon.com/arsblog. It costs $5 a month. You get instant access to everything, and you can sign up for as long as you want, or even just a month if that's all you want to. Patreon.com/arsblog. James and I will be here on Monday with the Arsecast Extra. Fingers crossed for a good footballing weekend and something that will lift all our moods. Until then, take it easy, folks. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Holy God FM, Fleetwood Mac and Little Lies. Don't forget, later this evening, Art Father will be on between 11 and 2 with more 80s classics. Now, though, we have an email from a listener. They say, "Dear Holy God FM, my boss has been very mean to me lately. He hasn't been giving me work to do, even though I'd like to do the work. Sure, I'm getting paid and all, but that's not giving me fulfillment. Now, though, he's under a bit of pressure, and he's bringing me back into the fold to see if I can help. I know that Jesus said forgiveness is 9/10 of the law, but I still feel very unhappy about this. My feelings were very hurt, and I feel like I've been humiliated in front of all my colleagues. That's not easy to forget or forgive. Please, Holy God FM, in my hour of need, tell me, what would you do in these very difficult circumstances?" Well, listener, whoever you are, I thought about this long and hard. You're right, it's not easy, but if it were me, and I'm only speaking on my own behalf here, if it were me, I'd go out and I'd create 3 goals for Aubameyang and probably score a couple myself. Anyway, it's up to you how you continue. This is Holy God FM, playing all the hits that you want to hear. Here's a song for the week that's in it. It's the Bangles, and Going Down to Liverpool.
On a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.